So I'm the first to have astral panels. So I did the McLuhan, Duchamp, Beter, Krishnamurti on April 18th, 1995. And you get Ellie, Michael's wife, puts Michael in trance, and then Ellie locates the people that we're going to ask about. So she located the four guys, and then we started the session. So you don't hear the locating part, which is on the recording, but I'll move it past that. And also Ellie will give the location where we are. We were at Church Street near the intersection of Bloor Street and Yonge Street, the center of downtown Toronto. It was this hotel called Town Inn. They always had their sessions there. So then I came back on September 8th, LaRouche's birthday, and wanted to analyze LaRouche's philosophy, state of mind, how much was his physics crazy or real. And so I got Ellie to locate, and you hear five people, Jesus, what did I say, Jesus, somebody, Ezra Pound, a bunch of, I named the five people. There's going to be eight eventually, but we start off with five. We begin with Kepler. It should be Nelson Rockefeller, Pound, McLuhan, Kepler, and Jesus. I brought in Jesus to represent psychic science. Rockefeller is economic science, the economics of science. McLuhan and the media of science. Kepler is a beginning point in modern science. And Ezra Pound is poetic science. And this is going to be very interesting. We learn a lot of things unforeseen about new developments coming in science, which may have been about us. So let's start this.
So we've got five people, Jesus, Einstein, McLuhan, Pound, Kepler, maybe six? Okay. And I may locate a few other people after a while to bring them in, but let's begin with this. Johannes Kepler, in his cosmology in the book Harmony of the World, used the spherical model, the model of the sphere, to construct his dimensional model based on the Platonic solids. Now, Albert Einstein, he took a spherical view of nature to get past Newton, the problems with Newton in space-time relationships and also in terms of gravity. Could the Evergreens first, in general, say, is matter within a sort of super dense spherical bubble?
Or matter is energy. Energy has a tendency to pull itself together rather than separate itself.
Are there laws that shape that pulling together?
In the weak force of the universe, the weak force of the atom, you'll find that that is the most powerful that that draw this into its sphere.
So there is a sphere, or do you mean that metaphorically?
Metaphorically. You see, if you're going to take the weak energy of an atom, and let us begin with hydrogen, because it's the easiest, the weak energy between the atom and the nucleus is that which draws the atom into its own sphere of self. As a rudimentary description on the polemic. Now, if you would take this as a single time event, and you would say that this affects all things within this single time event, then the atom existing in this time event, associated with others of its like kind, will have a tendency to coalesce, because it is the weak force that draws the atom to itself, that draws itself to other atoms. That with this weak force, you then can, by sheer exponential numbers of atoms, create gravity. And gravity does, as obvious as gravity does, from that one-time event. That gravity would then cause fusion, which would then cause the shift from hydrogen to helium to then other denser matter.
The periodic table.
Through the periodic table. But beginning with such an object as a sun, well, there's your object. Now, the problem is distance. The distance from one atom to another, and the distance of one galaxy from one galaxy. And that which traverses a galaxy as light. And that light is a matter, is not an energy. It is a matter. Light has weight. Its volume is hard to discover. But even light has volume. You see?
Yes.
Now, will everything proceed from that hydrogen atom as the base matter of the universe? The problem being that in the creation of matter must be the destruction of energy. But if there is total energy conversion, then you would have total matter. And E would then equal mc squared. But what if there is an incomplete transference, not going against the E equals mc squared, but saying that that's perfect? And so that's something to look at. And that possibly something is perfect in the universe. But what if in the conversion of energy to matter, that not all energy is converted?
Would that be, that would include that?
It would suppose that matter in itself is on different levels of heat. That matter, as it can be handled on a day-to-day basis, is but one fraction of that energy which was converted.
The energy from other dimensions. The original energy.
The original energy. The original energy created all that can be seen. But does it mean that all that can be seen is all that is? What energies exist that cannot be seen? Now, obviously, that there is, in the creation of matter, the creation of that which is not matter. Now, let us define matter. Light, in its total band, through ultraviolet, infrared, through X-ray, all the way, all of that is created by the energy that was transformed. Also, energy was transformed into the periodic table. But is that all that is? That's the question.
Yeah.
What energies have not been discovered because there is not the measuring instrument that can record it? There are measuring instruments for matter from the six senses themselves. There are instruments that will record that which even the six senses are unaware. But it is the invention of the measuring device. Until that, there is no examination of that which could be. And it is assumed that all of energy is either in light or in the periodic table. Why should it only be there? Until the Rutherford and those would examine the possibility of a radio wave and of some measurement of it. What is the measurement of a radio wave? The original instrument was a receiver as a measurer. A transmitter as a measurer. But the point of this perception is until there was the invention of the receiver, there was no indication that the transmitter itself was operational or that anything was happening. There is no radio, in quotes, with all of the energies that exist in the universe. So if Kepler was to use his model, it is accurate only from the perspective of the examination of that which already exists. Not necessarily all of those things which are factors. For the understanding, one must know first of those energies which are yet not, because one does not have the instrument to do so, measurable. And what effect do they have on that which is measurable at this time? Now, it's obvious that if you're going to see an effect within this universe is going to be a cause. And it could be extremely useful to say that all observable effects are caused by all known causes. And it could be seen that to do is then to be, and that to create a universe from Newton's principles and vast distances and the fact that something had to be done to expand upon his particular description of measurement. His principles, yes. These are all known. However, the causality of the universe may be beyond that which is measurable by present measuring instruments. What effect is there on the energy that exists at another level that has been called telepathy but is not measurable? That certain people were to experiment where by random chance can be altered, but by the application of a mental energy
that
that there can be an alteration of random chance.
Is that the sixth sense, since we normally think of five senses?
The six.
Yeah.
But what energy is it? What energy is this that is being perceived, and that possibly the perception can be a measuring device, but there is no measuring device that is acceptable to those who would measure measuring devices. If you look at an energy that's within the spectrum of knowledge of energy from light and the periodic table, you would see that they are constrained by speed. And that speed of light is considered the ultimate speed within that particular parameter. If you would say light is included, matter is included, then these things are limited by the speed of light, which is the fastest of within that particular grouping. But let us assume that there are other groupings that have not been measured, that can be assumed. Do they travel faster? Now, if an energy exists beyond what is already known, a weird first from the thesis, or even hypothesis, that all energy is not converted into the observable or measurable, then is there an energy in this universe that is not bound by the constraints that are within that all known?
Would that be time?
What energy is time?
All right, well, I think...
What energy is beyond even this? What energy is existing in mind? Can mind affect? That's the argument. Some have argued that it has. Does. And that certain experiments, if random happens, that they can be then caused to be unrandom by thought, and the experiment is repeatable. What are we talking with here? What are you talking of? We are talking of an influence of an energy.
All right, can I interject? I've laid out some interesting principles. Now, in light of this, I think of in the world of the atom, like in our trance, and you had this image of seeing the atom as a planetary model, slowed down, you could follow the movement of the electrons. Then as it speeded up, it went down into a hole or a dimension that one couldn't see. So Mike could see that there was another dimension, but didn't know what it was. Now I take that image and make it parallel with the image of a black hole, where the sun is collapsing in on itself, and then remains trapped in the black hole, is how we describe it. Is the black hole actually us seeing the other dimension that Mike saw when he looked?
Interesting. You see, when you reach this particular point where the gravitational pull is so much that light cannot escape, that the very essence of light, to its shape, its dimension, cannot leave, then you have a great gravity well. Now, in that great gravity well, two things happen. One thing is it stretches and malforms the universe in which it's in. It malforms this on some very interesting levels associated with gravity. Now, it's malformation. Question to be noted is, since the gravitational force is so powerful that it can cause light to not escape itself, is that gravity hole a well? It is a contention here that the black hole is a physical manifestation of an atom in other universes.
Who makes that contention?
Einstein.
All right. He didn't think that when he was alive.
Not true.
He thought that.
And said that time is affected by an immense gravity well.
Time is affected by immense gravity well. And how would that relate to the chakra body? And does nature have a chakra body?
Confusion of the two, in truth. No, nature itself does not have a chakra body. Though all things have energy.
That's more of what I mean. They have chakra energy? All things?
That's the point, isn't it? That's the point is, when energy is everything changed to what is measurable? Now, the chakric energy within organisms how is it measured?
All right, taking that question, let's have Ezra Pound comment on the question and answer it, and then we have their Kepler comment on it, have the various entities we worked with comment on that question from their view, I guess, as when they were alive, or maybe if now it still exists.
You have the view of Kepler and you have the view of Einstein.
Yes.
Pound's view is more from the perspective of observing the universe and not having the eyes to see it.
Right. He said that thinking alters thinking. Thinking alters what is thought about, is a quote apparently from him.
Yes. But his point is, he's more to the point of saying that the observability of the universe would shift if you had different eyes to see it. If born in other conditions, then your eyes would be adapted to the conditions, and that so would the mind. That your observation would be affected not only by what you use to observe, but the mind that observes through that means of observing.
What would Jesus say to Einstein to that question? The Nazarene.
Says this. He says, the greater problem in any observance is, and he echoes Pound's point of view, but amplifies on it somewhat, says that the mind is set to perceive what is willing to perceive, and within the parameters of its own ability to perceive, and that the average person has a tendency to see that which is average, and that those who are not average have a tendency to see that which is not average, and that the shaping of the search in this has come from the point of only being able to see the physical part of the universe and not the other parts of the universe that have yet to have a measuring device.
But Jesus was able to act on with the chakra energies and create miracles.
Yes.
Or psychic healing.
Indeed, the learning of the energies that he worked with. What he says is, having the training to... he says, science has a tendency to be a measurable systemology. And because of its being a measurable systemology, has its certain advantages. But its major disadvantage is that because it cannot measure something, has a tendency to say that it does not exist or cannot exist. So all, once again, linked to the quality and the quantitization of measuring instruments. It says that when he was being taught in his early years to the energies that exist, that his contention was that these energies were as real as all other things. And if they were real, they could be used as all other things. Just as fire could be used, just as metalworking could be used, just as anything. A plane, shaping wood, a chisel. These things obviously exist as matter. But what is there is, this is contention, that other energies are just as real. You'll treat them that way. You'll interact with them that way. You'll believe in them.
He made the choice.
He made the choice.
Now, what would Einstein say about his search for truth and understanding matter in his life? Did not occur to him to think the way Jesus thought in his life?
To a degree, what Einstein says is his understanding of energy led him to looking very carefully several steps backwards. It could be seen that E equals MC squared, which was his view, which led to the understanding of radioactivity and the creation of energy through matter, particularly using radioactives. But this led him on a course to saying, where do you define energy? Where do you define matter? And if you go further back, then there must be an energy before what is termed an energy. Light is termed as an energy, but Einstein says, no, light is a substance. It has weight, it has dimension. It's a substance. So it was created from an energy. What energy? That was his point. Well, Einstein has two points here. It's been somewhat modified by the others in the group, but nonetheless, he has two major points. First, where did the energy come from which we call energy creates matter. And the second is all energy converted into what can be measured presently.
All right. Now, in the world of the atom, the Evergreens use the phrase theological scientist.
Yes.
I thought it was an interesting phrase because that can be, that is a way of looking at McLuhan, Pound, Einstein, Jesus, Kepler. They, would Einstein consider Marshall's discoveries in his book Laws of Media as a new addition to theological science?
From the positive aspect, theological science is a tendency to be bound by the theology.
So it's a historical term, is how?
To the milieu in which there has been the thinking.
Right. So,
the other question is asked is, yes, it is seen as an addition.
Because Marshall's talking about the means of measurement and the questions that come out of that. Now, Plato talked about the higher hypothesis. Is the higher hypothesis, rather than simple perception and simple hypothesis, and then the third level is the hypothesizing of the higher hypothesis, is that the creative energy of our mind, and that is the level that matter does not allow us to see?
It's the level that can be reached. Now, in a theological science, what level is reached in each milieu in which science exists?
Right. Nowadays, some physicists want to include Buddhist theology to start to encompass the chakric level or the astral level.
So, because there's an energy that is not yet presently being measured, that there is no measuring device. But the point is, and the Nazarene brings this out, if those individuals do wish to bring in a Buddhist philosophy and theology so that there can be the examination through the words and concepts within Buddhism, then obviously the arrangement before this did not allow the observation, because they did not have the words or the concepts that are being brought in by the Buddhists' point of view. That if a science has excluded an energy, or because it has not measured it, has said that it must not either be there or could not exist, and now is coming to the proposition that possibly not all energies are measured, and then bringing in the Buddhists' point of view, so that from that particular aspect there can be examination of something which is yet not measurable, then what is the difference, the Nazarene says, what is the difference between his teachers who taught him that this was possible and believed that it was possible, and science that closed down? How do you open up science? It must then become inclusive. If it is exclusive, then it would exclude the Buddhists.
All right. Would anybody comment on the statement? I'm going to make this statement. The fact we've gone from the time of the Nazarene to now, and we went through the various largely Western forms of knowledge and Western forms of measurement, beginning with the Renaissance, were they astrologically determined by the fact it was the age of Pisces, or is there a larger map where this was an evolutionary development which would lead to the frictionless society after 2000 AD? Or if we'd all listened to the Nazarene, would we have sort of not gone along that long 2,000-year process and would have evolved differently to a better situation, or actually maybe an incomplete situation which would not have created fusion energy?
Well, there are some smiles at that particular question, because it is a very important and extremely valid question. That if, as Einstein says, if evolution were so simple as to say, first this, then that, then the other, then everything can become infinitely predictable. If you can see it from all aspects and know what this is before there's that. But the Nazarene points out the cultural leaps and the cultural jumps in that period were not leaps or jumps. They were oftentimes circles and circles and circles and recircling and recircling. If you can take the words of the Nazarene and after 2,000 years realize that possibly they can be, as far as a general consideration is concerned, as to the larger number of people that exist, that possibly that these words have some validity, then what forces prevented these words from being seen as valid, which Kepler says is a sociological phenomenon, not science?
Is that view limited by the time he lived in?
To a degree. To a degree.
But his personality continues and still sees it that way.
Still sees that it's not that there's an external force, but there's an internal force that has a tendency to maintain a particular point of view. He says that's psychological. Sociological. That is sociological, he says.
That internal force?
That internal force, yes.
Sociologically created.
Sociologically created and remains.
Yes. That is, he's talking about the medium of our times, or that's the case for him?
That's the case for the medium of the times.
Right.
Now, McLuhan points out something of extreme interest. That a particular mindset is accelerating within this particular century. And the particular mindsets are being promulgated more because of the communication of mindsets. Or as he points out, it's the death of paranoia.
Right, which comes into a point in the Chakric Body tapes, the Evergreens point out that we individually are connected to everybody else on the planet.
Yes.
And so on that level, the death process and how we see the different dimensions when we are dead and in spirit involves the personality interacting with other personalities.
Yes.
Which has an effect on the future determination of the contents of this world of matter when we reincarnate.
Yes, it does.
So that's part of physics.
It's a part of physics. It's also a part of communication at a level that is not a recognized method of communication. It communicates, but it does not communicate. It does not communicate words. It communicates circumstance. It creates balances. It creates opportunities.
It's a shaping factor.
A shaping factor, true.
Now, is radionics, or perhaps the Burr machine, are there machines called radionics, and I think there are psionic machines, are they on the direction of measuring these things?
Yes.
So radionic machines work.
They do indeed.
But what are we limited in accepting them? Why are we limited?
Because of a particular mindset.
Now, that mind...
The mindset is, and this is what McLuhan is pointing out. The mindset is that all energies are perceived. All energies are perceived, and all those that are discovered are but extensions of those which have already been perceived.
That is what the mindset is
that's
developing today.
That's the mindset.
An opening of the mind, sense of the mindset is what we're being changed into.
Yes. Now, the point is that McLuhan says that's a form of paranoia. It's a form of rigidity within thinking that defends itself by its really parameters of saying that everything is an extension of everything already discovered. So it presumes all things have been discovered. And now it's a matter of fine-tuning it.
All right. Do you want to say a little more?
McLuhan says that it's obvious that through history there has been discovery of new phenomena.
Right. Now, I'd like to take this, the people we've talked to here, and look at the mind of Lyndon LaRouche. Do you need to locate him?
Yes, we have this one.
Yeah, in Leesburg, Virginia, born in 1922.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah. Now, I find his writings very interesting that he takes Plato's sense of the higher hypothesis. He says Kepler made a breakthrough on that, and that this, Kepler's model of the sphere is a metaphor.
Yes.
And then he says Einstein retrieved some of Kepler's spherical sense of reality via Bernard Riemann.
Yes.
And then Marshall talks about the spherical nature of acoustic space. Lyndon LaRouche talks about the change factor. Now, I don't think he's talking about perceiving chakra energies, but his theological science, since he is a devout Christian conceptually, includes the statement that change is the real essence of matter. Now, would the various people we've contacted, from Pound and McLuhan to Einstein and Jesus, comment on LaRouche's theories, also in mind that LaRouche is a paranoid person, apparently.
You see, if you would look toward the universe as a sphere, what if light itself does not travel in a straight line? What if there is a no matter how slight, the light will always return to the point from which it came.
So there's the circle as the self-evident geometric form.
Yes. No matter how slight the curve. Now, Einstein says, is there a uniformity to the curve? And that was what he was working on shortly before his death. That obviously, if the curve is extremely slight, then it would appear as if it's a straight line. So therefore, if you're going to have fusion or fission, you're going to get the effect of essentially straight line.
That's fission.
Fission.
Fission energy.
Yes. You're going to get a straight effect of a straight line. Now, if you're going to have light emitted, a short distance appears as straight across a greater distance, there's a curve. And since the edges of the universe are not known, is this a massive sphere? LaRouche would talk of change. Change on what level? Cosmic or the perception of the cosmic?
He would talk about change as it's McLuhan-esque, that the new technological developments change our perception, and that change is the energy that makes us develop future technology.
Which then cause the creation of future energies, which cause then future technologies.
Yes.
The Nazarene puts it from another point. It says that unless you learn all things are possible, all things are not possible. Because you're caught in a a stage where your possibilities are framed within a particular constraint. That possibly a phrase such as "all things are possible" causes the person to see outside the frame and start working with their mind on that which could exist outside the frame. McLuhan says that this is speeding, this is becoming faster, and that there is an inevitability that when it becomes faster and faster, that it becomes virtually instantaneous.
Now that's the spinning spiral, which is LaRouche's image.
Yes.
So that's a basic image of the action of the universe.
Yes.
It's that the universe doesn't look like a spiral, you know, from our point of view, we see trees and buildings. But on some level, space-time is spinning, probably due to human beings' mental interaction collectively with matter.
Mm. Well, may we suggest that it's the possibility that and when energy is converted, not all is resultant in matter, and that the energy that is converted, not being fully converted into matter, converts from energy to something else that is not being measured.
And influence.
That is our original contention when this began. But point here is that the perception of this is the chakric body.
So what is the shape of, I don't want to say universe, but we are always constantly trying to make shapes. For example, McLuhan had a square as the shape for tactility. And I found it interesting in the chakric body system that the Evergreens talked about the chakric in terms of tactility.
Yes.
And I would take Marshall's square as a symbol for tactility. Does not mean visually limited frame. It means tactility has no content as a frame, as a shaper.
It, however, does form a shape.
Yes, by using the other senses' input as content.
Yes.
Now, is that shaping factor of tactility the chakric energies?
Yes.
Now, what machines would it... the people will change to accept radionics as a measuring device and the Burr machine through Carolyn's work with Mir in the next 20 years?
Across the next 10, 20. Takes some time, but not as long as you think.
So we're always limited by what we want to see.
True. Limited by what we want to see, and also limited by the measuring devices that are permitted to be seen.
Right. Now let's say that McLuhan says that now we're being changed by the electric tactility environment, or the extension of tactility, so that we can now see this new levels of energy in matter. But I would say, using McLuhan's principle, that's because we're inside a more invisible energy-shaping situation that makes us see the recent past as new, the past being the chakric energies. Like, have we broken through and seeing finally all our energies, or will there be new energies created?
A new existing energies not measured, then measured.
Will we then create energies once we see all those existing ones?
Of course.
So that's the endless change.
Endless. One person who interrupts in this, and that's Edison. Who says he tried to build a device that would measure spiritual energy. It was not successful because now he realizes he was working on some wavelengths that were incorrect.
Should he have listened to Tesla?
He says he should have, but he didn't.
Would Tesla like to make a comment on this discussion? If he's locatable?
Well, Tesla says, build long enough aerial, you can capture anything. He says, oh, yes. That's what he was working upon. He says, if there is a spiritual energy, which from this perspective he realizes is, but is talking as if he were not knowing of it. He says, if there were a spiritual energy, and that spiritual energy can be measured, then that spiritual energy can be stored. There has to be a storage device for it. And if there's a storage device for it, then there is two propositions created. One is that life energy can be transferred from life energy holder to life energy holder. And second, he says, life energy may not be limited only to the organic.
Right. Now, as I listen to this conversation, it deals with a lot of things I've thought about. And I was wondering, in my particular life, is my scope directed towards inventing some machines that would do that, or would I be more inclined to have an interest in those machines and encourage those inventors? How would me, if I put on the role as a scientist, make moves now with this knowledge?
You're more the encourager that would cause others to work on it.
Because I am... Though I don't want to say this word, but I guess I am limited by my brain characteristics in certain talents and not in other areas, not as talented. Is that what we're talking about?
But you are a good persuader.
So more of a PR person.
Exactly. The Nazarene brings up a point of what Tesla brought out. He says, no, it's not two propositions, there's three. The third is that once it's measurable, second, it could be stored. And the Nazarene says, third, it could be created.
Now, in listening to the Evergreens tape on the Bible, always relevant, old and new, the great writers in the Bible had found God or had come to an answer. When the Evergreens say that generally spirit has not found God yet, but we will, was Jesus, as like any of us, still within the time frame of not experiencing God? Or is that something collective that the Evergreens are talking about, that we haven't found God yet?
Collectively, no.
Collectively, no, we haven't.
No.
But individually, we can.
Individually, yes.
Of the people, we have Einstein, McLuhan, Tesla, Pound, Kepler, Jesus. Did they all...
And Edison.
And Edison. And Lynn LaRouche will say, did they all find God in their lives as the Evergreens mean it when they say the biblical writers did?
Yes. All in your own way. But not necessarily the description. Einstein says that his discovery of God was found in the discovery of science, and that science does not separate from God, even though science cannot measure God, but all in the way found.
Did Lyndon LaRouche, is he found God on that level?
On that level? No, not completely. He has his understandings, but he has a fair amount of waking up to do.
In terms of his conception of what we can perceive.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't really want to think in terms of the chakric energies.
No, he doesn't wish. He wish to keep it within a particular paranoia, which is acceptable from where he is, to include certain other things upsets the theory and the dynamic and the shape of what he have.
And the obsessive fetishing about certain geometric imagery.
Exactly.
Because it seems to me that holding on an image. It's a talented mind who can hold with present day means of imagery, yet not be limited by the imagery.
Exactly.
Now, did Ezra Pound go into the silence for a particular aesthetic reason?
Well, yes, because he thought the noise was going to cause the misshaping of his perceptions. The noise shaped his perceptions.
Of the new radio electric age, of the TV and...
etc.
Yeah.
Of war. This is an interference, he said. But McLuhan says, no, cannot be. Cannot be, he says. Interference is the wave that you ride on, just as a surfer rides on a wave. Interference is part of it. Not to be discarded or to be set aside, but to be understood as a part of the equation.
Now, did the Marshall correspondent with Ezra Pound from 1948 on into the early 50s, was Marshall thinking then that Pound did not see that point?
Said then, yes.
He does not pointedly tell Pound that in his letters.
No.
But Marshall had an agenda to communicate something.
Yes. You see, to say that, you must have a soundproof room. Means to say that sound has something you must be proofed against. Now, if you're going to have an insulated room, and that insulation is from increased communication, then you cannot examine increased communication. You must be within increased communication to understand it.
Right. Now, I would like to, since we're coming to a close in this session, I'd like to bring up a statement that the Evergreens made in 1980 on the Bible tape.
Yes.
That the world will end, that there will be Armageddon, but it won't be a battle between God and Satan. It'll be a battle over the choices man's minds will make, I think,
yes,
is the words. Now, is the battle in that sense, the battle of men's minds, has not that been what Marshall McLuhan called World War III from 1945 till now, and a technological information communication war?
It's the war between those that choose one thing and those that choose another. You see, you either accept progress and modify it, or you do not accept progress and you destroy it. It's not so much Luddite as it is a philosophy. And the philosophy of those who cannot understand progress is because they are measuring it with a different instrument and different parameters than those who admire progress.
And I would say the Rockefeller family has to deal with that in relation to fusion technologies.
Exactly.
Would Nelson Rockefeller like to comment on that problem for his brothers and the descendants?
Well, he knows they will not hear it, but nonetheless, what he says to yourself is, you cannot fight it. Once out of the bottle, it's out. You can do what you want to slow it. And it was very useful to do this in the 1400s, 1500s, and possibly the 1600s, and maybe slightly of the 17th, but by the time you hit the 18th, 19th, and 20s, it's harder and harder to put the genie back in the bottle. To Nelson, he says, we must end on this, he says, you bring out the Renaissance. You mentioned this earlier. Nelson says, the Renaissance was the beginning of a period of time in which the genie could never be put back into the bottle. That's what the Renaissance was.
But Nelson Rockefeller, from his point of view, tried to stop progress.
Oh, yes, he tried. So where did it get him?
Did he become unhappy?
what in actuality happened? If he had been successful, where would the world be? Look at this which exists. If he looks at McLuhan and McLuhan nods, and McLuhan says, if not done here, then it'll be done there. McLuhan, again, Edison says, the synchronicity of idea creation is such that if you repress it here, you would have to repress it there because the idea is popping up here and there. And Pound says, you can't kill all ideas. You can kill some. You can slow them. You can't kill all of them. McLuhan again says, as technology brings ideas and concepts to a greater number of people who previously did not have these ideas or concepts, creates within these people idea generation, that by the generation of ideas, then there is the generation of technology. And so, therefore, there is the change of the mind, the change of the venue is now a world venue, and that ideas come from here, there, and everywhere. It cannot be done to stop them all.
Is Nelson... Okay.
Do you want to make a final comment on this? We're only 5 minutes
over. Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. What is being said is, if you think within it for a moment, revolutionary. If you can measure it, then eventually you can store it. And if you can store it, you could eventually make it. Think of the ramifications of what life is. Measured, stored, and created. And we do thank you.
Thank you,
everyone. Thank you,
everyone. So unless there's any further comment, shall we end the session?
Please.
Thank you. Dear Lord, please enfold these entities in thy love and thy perfection. Amen. Please clear any negative influences from these entities now.
Done.
Allow the body to become completely relaxed. Perform any healing which may need to be performed. Begin increasing the blood pressure to normal, naturally. And begin returning all other systems of the body to normal, naturally now.
Done.
Thank you for our sessions. And
we do thank you. To you both. God bless you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now I would like Michael to awaken feeling completely refreshed, relaxed, and loved now.
Okay, I'll stop the tape for a second. You see, Michael was put in such a deep trance, they had to bring his body processes back up. So that's what Ellie did there at the end, his wife Ellie. So now you're going to hear Michael's impressions or the imagery he got while unconscious, dream imagery, whatever you want to call it. So he's going to describe what he experienced, which is always interesting. So he's awakened, and then he speaks.
Came out of that section, I was looking at a sphere that turned back on itself.
How does that happen?
It's almost like a toroid.
Yeah, the torus image.
Yeah.
So it half goes
yeah,
like the
yeah. Like a donut.
Yeah.
Now, fascinating to me was that I was watching this speck of matter, dense matter, very, 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 very dense. And when it came into existence from one time to another, it came to existence in the second position of time, there was nothing to constrain it. Bam! It just exploded beyond, because there was nothing to constrain it at all. And it was incredibly dense. And it just became huge. huge amount of light. It was first, the first transformation of Maine that I could see was light. And then that light, with such incredible power, became energy, light became matter.
That's the second thing. So the first image is light, dense.
Uh-huh.
Then it expands.
Dense. Then what I could see was, as that thing exploded, light. It transformed almost all of itself into light, which then transformed itself into matter.
Right.
Okay, so light created matter.
But the dense, the first thing is very strange.
The first thing is very, very strange because not everything that it created from itself as it exploded became light. There were other energies not in the electromagnetic spectrum. They were not just on a totally different spectrum.
Yeah.
Now, I tried to see it, and I couldn't because I couldn't see it. I could see the light, but I couldn't see, because my eyes were not perceiving that. And I thought, well, if I could perceive it, what would I see?
Yeah, you started to conceive the possibility.
Conceive the possibility. And what I saw was that Denston, now, this kind of boggled me. It exploded, and as it exploded, visible light came out. The electromagnetic spectrum came out, and traveling at the speed of light. But as it exploded, the whole universe, to all of its edges that we don't even know net, were blue. It suddenly became blue.
Blue.
Blue. And I guess it was just a representation of color.
Yeah.
Because color is still on the electromagnetic spectrum. But it took no time to fill the universe. No time. In other words, the light won't even reach the edges of the universe because that blue mass is already there.
And that was your visualization when you asked to visualize.
Yeah. Of something that was, it was not faster than light, it had no time within it.
It was all-inclusive instant something.
Yeah. So it seems the universe then, and that, through that blueness, in a way defined the universe. How far it goes out, I have no idea.
But it contradicts. It's another level because there's no time. So there's no distance, in a sense.
But the universe does have a physical mess. You keep on going out, you won't reach the edge. You just won't. But that blueness was there.
But in a way, we won't reach it.
Well, the blueness is all around. It's still here. It's still.
Is it permeating us?
Uh-huh.
Or is it more of an outer.
No, it's all through everything. It's through everything. It permeates everything.
Well, that's the chakric energy, in a sense, you saw.
I think so, to a degree. But what I saw was, and it fascinated me about it, really did, was that we don't have an instrument to measure it. We really don't.
No.
Radionics
is doing something.
Uh-huh. But even radionics themselves is not a measuring. The fact that A affects B through instrument C is still maybe focusing on energy, but we still can't measure the energy. It's only a device for projecting it or focusing it or whatever, but it's not a measuring device. We still don't have a measuring device in that. Now, the Burr machine has a tendency to measure life fields.
Life fields.
Life fields. And there has been work that shows that if you cut the leg off a salamander, you're still going to find the outline of the leg of the salamander and all that. So there's a field there which we can measure somewhat, but we cannot measure it quantitatively. We can only measure it to a degree, but we're still measuring it.
Right.
Yeah. And it's now becoming an argument between those who can measure dimension, like a ruler will measure length, breadth, and depth, and we have a voltmeter that will measure average currents and resistance, etc. But all we know is that with a Burr thing, we can outline a field. That's all we know is that a field is there. We don't know what the field is. We're getting close to measure.
Yeah, but it's not the chakric energy, since you say it's part of life, which is sort of what we call this matter zone.
One thing that I do know is that you can't measure the chakras of a dead person because they aren't there. It's something dealing with the life force
right.
in an individual is not there when the energy is there. Now, the other one I thought was fascinating was, and this is purely representational, I saw somebody who was just really brimming with health. Said, man, I feel just great. And I'm going to store a little bit of this. Took it out real good. I mean, put it on I know it's just purely my own mind working on something that I can easily encompass. Had a little 1.5 volt battery. He charged it up with himself. Didn't feel any worse for it because he was feeling really good. And about 6 months, a year later, had a little bit of a sniffle. He says, energy's down a little. Takes up the battery, recharges himself.
By sort of touching it.
By touching it, yeah. All of that stuff is representational because I don't know how this stuff is going to be stored or whatever. But what I always thought is interesting is the next thing about this was you could go down and you could buy a battery of life energy. And as cheap as buying an ever-ready battery today.
Gee.
You just go down and you buy some energy, Not feeling good? Oh, gee.
Buy some life. Or is this sort of immortality implied stuff?
No, I don't know if it looked like it was the creation of energy. And yes, it does have something to do with longer life expectancy.
Yeah.
Etc. Charging with a manufactured energy. It was a energy. We've discovered the spectra. We discovered the way to get. So we create it. And it's charged. And you say, well, I want to charge myself up a little bit. We do. And, like anything else, can't charge it up.
There's something that came up in that session that what you just saw was one of the things I was going to ask about was, did I hear them say, you didn't follow up on it, and so it got dropped, but it was something about if it can be measured, then it can be stored, then can it be transferred?
Created. Measured, stored, and created.
Created and transferred.
But transferred, the thought of transferring it.
Came in there before created?
In there, yeah.
Yeah.
And
a stored system doesn't necessarily mean it has to be stored for the person who originally acquired it.
No, of course not. Transferred. Well, you transfer it back to yourself or to someone else.
Yeah. Oh, fascinating. I've never thought of that. Mm-hmm. So that could be a way towards having energy.
Supposedly that's what people do with crystals. They mm-hmm. charge them up and then they discharge them on somebody.
Yeah. But
this is
different.
This was looked like it was a commercial venture. I mean, and the other one was fascinating about it. There was a guy there, and I don't know who he was. I really don't know who he was. I did not recognize him at all. And he said,